This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Sherwood, backhand pass near point for Philip Hronek. Drop through traffic, tip, they score! Danton Heinen to the side of the net, digs it home for his second of the night. And the Canucks reestablish the two-goal lead. It's 3-1. JT Miller, back to Hughes, top of the point. Leaves for Miller, just held into the line. Sends it in front, tip, they score! Brock Besser in the slot, deflects it past Mrazek on the glove side. And the Canucks make it 5-2 with their second power play goal of the night.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Now a shot for the line, they score right off the faceoff. The Canucks extend their lead. This might have been Pugh Suter's goal as he was parked in the slot. Brännström threw it to the net, and it bounces to Suter, who tucks it into the yawning cage. 6-2, Canucks.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks double up the Blackhawks on the road to wrap up a four-game road trip with three victories, and the Canucks win 6-3 in Chicago against the Blackhawks. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bik Nizar. We are going to welcome in Randeep Janda into the discussion in just a moment. You can interact with us throughout the night here on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. And, you know, the Canucks started off the season not with their best form. They dropped their first two games with having a lead. The third game, you know, was a bit of a more lopsided score against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But since then, they've improved their game. They've won three in a row. And heading back to Vancouver now, Bik, you feel pretty good about how the Canucks have begun their campaign.
They started with a three-game losing streak. They continue with a three-game winning streak. So they have offset it all. Of course, they pick up points in the first two with those blown leads in the third period. But they move the ticker along. And so now this will put them at 8 points through six games, three natural wins. So if you're worried about, you know, the loser points giving you to 500. Now they're actually at true 500. Nevertheless, they're it's turned around real fast, and 8 points in six games is something you can build upon as you kind of get into this first 20, which are very important.
Yeah, they are. The start matters, and the Canucks start right now after losing the first couple of games has turned around in a hurry. So let's go and bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation here. And Randeep, you know, I agree with a lot of what you were saying breaking the game down here tonight. I thought there were moments in the first I didn't like how loose they were, but since the first period, as far as the team game goes, and we'll hear from the head coach, the 6-3 score, sure, six goals and whatever, I'm sure talk is going to be a lot happier about how they close up shop in the second and third period.
For sure, and anytime you get six goals, you're happy with that. I think second period on, 5-on-5, Vancouver was strong. They were solid. They didn't really, you know, give up too much. It was just a couple of penalties in the second period. We saw it in the third period where you're potentially giving a team a chance to get back in the game. In the third period, it was settled when that 5-on-3 happened. In the second period, there were a couple of chances, but you know, listen, Chicago didn't score. Vancouver took advantage in the third period, but 5-on-5, I thought they played a very, very strong game tonight, especially in the final two periods. It was probably a little loose for Rick Tocchet's liking in that first period, but you know, if you can come out of that first period with four goals out of the six, you can be happy with that and reset defensively, and I felt that's what they did 5-on-5 as this game went on.
It makes it so much easier when 21 seconds into the game you already have a lead as well, and you know, it's something that they were so good at last year, getting the first goal of the game, and done a decent job so far this year as well. But you can see Canucks hockey a lot easier when they're playing with the lead, Randy.
For sure, and they're not squeezing their sticks looking for a goal. They're, you know, playing comfortable, they're skating forward to defend, and they're being aggressive on the forecheck, right, where you're able to eat possession of the puck. And I love what I loved in that third period outside the penalties was, you know, there are two or three shifts where the third and fourth line, they're just eating up the clock, right? They're eating time there, and that's what you want. You want them skating forward. You want them to lean on the opposition. And the other benefit, guys, of scoring early is you start looking at those ice times. Quinn Hughes, 19:49 tonight.
Yeah.
For a guy that's, you know, playing 26 minutes a game to start the year, now you're in a situation where you're saying, all right, you know what, Brännström, 14 minutes again. You're in a situation where Tyler Myers is leading the entire team in ice time with 22:34, and you're able to get some of your key guys rest. And even in the forward group, we're talking about JT Miller. We know he's dealing with something. He plays 16 minutes and 20 seconds. You're able to rest him a little bit as this night goes on and get him ready for Pittsburgh. that is huge. But to bring that energy, and I said it during the game, the third line is starting to look like the third line from last year, where they're leaned on for some offense, but energy and to swing back momentum towards the Canucks way. Rick Tocchet is using them the same way he used Connor Garland, Dakota Joshua, and Teddy Bluger last year. They played a very connected style of hockey, and you can see that today with Danton Heinen and Sherwood and Bluger.
I mean, where do we even begin on that line? They probably were the Canucks' best line. I mean, it's one of those games I threw the question out on Twitter. Who was your best Canucks? Who was your best player tonight? Who was the player of the game for you tonight? And honestly, it's a tough one to nail down. There are a number of players you can give a lot of love to, and that line as a whole was fantastic. But I thought Kiefer Sherwood, again, as far as a player becoming comfortable with the team, we know his physicality is there, but you're starting to see it now with the plays he's making with the puck. There was one play he made, and I know he didn't get a point on it, but it was a pass through the neutral zone. He was by the opposition blue line, and he kind of puts a stick between his leg and makes a nice little deflection pass, and it goes to, I think it was Bluger or a Heinen, and they end up doing a zone entry. But he makes nice, subtle little plays. But I mean, let's talk about that tag-up play. We'll see what he says post-game, whether he was thinking about it or not. But if he wasn't thinking about it, it's the luckiest, smartest, no-thinking play you can make. But this player is showing not only good hockey IQ, good physicality, but he's showing a little bit of skill as well.
Absolutely. And I hope, you know, that the reporters ask him about that, because that reaction, if it is something that he identified and made, that's a split second. That's 1 second. You got time to react, and you think and process that so quickly. But guys, another 12 hits tonight. He's got 33 hits
unbelievable.
In the last three games, right? And I don't know if a player can play like this 82 games. Obviously, it's not possible, but he has got a motor on him. And the Kiefer Sherwood we saw in the playoffs last year, there's elements of that here in the regular season. Two more points, two assists, and you're right. You know, in 15 minutes, he was able to create offense. He was dangerous. He was, you know, an agitator, and that's what you call making an impact in your select amount of time, where he's getting a little bit more ice time now because clearly that line is trusted by Rick Tocchet. And even though he was, you know, such a strong player, and yeah, absolutely in the running for the player of the game, I think Danton Heinen and his finishing ability, the chemistry he is developing with that trio speaks volumes in the last two games. He had his first three shots on goal in the last game. He gets two goals tonight, which is showing you how comfortable he is. And guys, I think Teddy Bluger, he's a player that we talked about pregame as well, Sat. He just does so many of the, you know, the subtle things, and defensively, he's doing all the hard work where he's back checking. He's, you know, coming into the play and making sure that a transition chance doesn't develop. He got caught on that Ryan Donato penalty late in the game in the third period, but there's so many plays where he's just making a subtle, just slowing guys down in the neutral zone, which is so important. So I think with Sherwood and Heinen and, of course, Teddy Bluger, they've got a little bit something different from each player. And I love the way that, you know, they play. But to me, Teddy Bluger and the way that he's been able to be kind of like the defensive foundation of that line early on this season, he does a lot of hard work, and he's actually getting rewarded for it offensively as well. Another assist tonight.
I just tried bringing it up and just to illustrate how ridiculous Kiefer Sherwood's efforts are so far. The by my count here, by the looks of it, the record is 386 hits in a season by Jeremy Lauzon last season. Kiefer Sherwood, if I've just done the math correctly, is on pace for 601. 601.
Let's go.
Now, that'll come down quite a bit.
So even if it drops by a third, it'll still 400.
It's still 400.
He's on pace to set the record. Let's go. Let's go.
No, and we'll see if he ultimately does. But he's just been a revelation, been a fantastic addition to the team. And, you know, his line mate, Danton Heinen, was stealing the show early, had got his first two goals as a Canuck. And, you know, there was a little bit of, I wouldn't say uneasiness, but he was starting to catch the attention of Canucks fans because he hadn't yet really put himself on the map. He had picked up a couple of assists, had some moments, but hadn't really popped. He certainly popped tonight. And it shows you how quickly narratives can change early in the season. He went from having 2 points in five games looking very nondescript to now having 4 points in six games and making a big mark on the team already.
Well, guys, when you're playing on a line, you know, we can pencil it in as this is going to be the fit on the line, whether it's Jake DeBrusk or Danton Heinen. But, you know, the fit and when you start skating with a set of players, that's when you find out. And I think with Danton Heinen, for me, with that top line of JT Miller and Brock Besser, I didn't feel like he was getting home enough. He wasn't getting there quick enough, where there just seems to be a lot more chemistry. He's more engaged in battles. Sherwood, as an F1, as a guy that can go and disrupt right off the bat, is something that we're seeing. Those 12 hits, a lot of them are on the forecheck. Some of them on open ice, some of them along the boards. But, you know, they're generally in the offensive zone where he's able to disrupt and really, you know, attack the puck carrier and dislodge the puck. So with Heinen, he's rangy. He's somebody that can, you know, close passing lanes in the defensive zone for the opposition. And he can just jump in as maybe that second guy, occasionally be that F1. I think it's a better fit there. And with these guys, are all three of them are good to really find each other in tight, right? In and around the goal line, below, you know, the net and behind the net, they're playing really connected and close to each other, which I think Heinen is thriving under that situation to say, okay, you know what? We all have interchangeable parts to a certain extent, and he's just finding himself in dangerous areas. That second goal he scored to get on the other side of, you know, Vlasic, and Vlasic has no idea what's going on there, but just an excellent tip by Danton Heinen to send that one home. It was, hey, I know how to score goals, and I'm going to get on the inside and be available for this pass. I like the way he's playing, and I think this is just maybe a better fit for him. Is he's a guy that works hard, and to be able to be that second forechecker in and settle down possession after the wrecking ball that is Kiefer Sherwood goes in there and dislodges the puck, it's working right now. So we'll see how long it goes, but it's nice to have some options here if you're Rick Tocchet to say, you know, a strong third line is key. And so far, this group of players, this trio, is showing that they can be that.
But it really illustrates the point, Randeep, from Patrick Alvin of, you know, once they were eliminated, they didn't feel like they had options, right? And we wouldn't have sat here in preseason and all during the summer thought, oh, you know what? A Sherwood-Heinen pairing would be interesting. It's not really a formulation we thought of. And now, you know, Joshua's going to come back at some point. And you think, okay, well, how do you fit all these pieces in? Hoglander's suddenly thriving. Garland's looks like he's earning a top six role. And now, once guys are having a certain level of success, you actually do see viable options that are going to create a lot of competition to get minutes.
Yeah, and that's a great situation for a coach to be in. And it also is a good situation for just your roster, because you're not in a position, I don't think this would be the case anyways, but, you know, you're not in a situation where you have to, you're really missing Dakota Joshua and you need him in the lineup mm-hmm. right now, where the team is desperate. So you can ease in on his, you know, his own schedule, and you can kind of maybe try him out. This is a very serious thing that he's gone through and he's going through. So to have this flexibility to say, hey, guy, you know, don't worry. You know, next man up, they're stepping up right now. They're doing their thing. That's an excellent spot for any coach to be in to say, hey, don't worry. You take your time. You do what you need to do. You're in a non-contact jersey right now. It's going to be a good problem, and we'll see in the next couple of weeks, I assume. But, you know, with Kiefer Sherwood, with Danton Heinen, and then you start looking at that fourth line. That's the one that obviously is the one that you start looking at to say, all right, who's going to be, unfortunately, bumped down when Dakota Joshua is ready? You know, that kind of revolving door of Sprong and Bantz is the obvious spot you look at bumping somebody down. But, guys, Heinen 2 goals. Bluger is not moving from that third line. And Kiefer Sherwood, just being the wrecking ball that he is, it is a difficult decision. But, you know, one thing is for sure, you add a player like a Sherwood, like a Heinen, or a Dakota Joshua to a potential fourth line,
yeah,
any one of those three, that's a fantastic problem to have.
So it's death, taxes, and JT Miller not missing hockey games is what it looks like. Because this guy, yep, no matter what, is going to line up. Now, he's missed games throughout his career. He's missed a few games as a Canuck. But generally speaking, this guy's going to play through anything. And for a guy who didn't take a single faceoff and maybe not his best game overall, but something that, you know, I keep thinking about is what the head coach says about him. Whether he has his B game, he has a C game, he finds ways to contribute, and he had another 3 points here tonight, despite being nowhere near his physical peak.
Yeah, and that speaks to just what type of player he is, guys. On, you know, those power play, that opportunity on the 5-2 goal, where, you know, he takes command of the puck, you know, mm-hmm, a little drop pass from Quinn Hughes, and then you can see Chicago freeze when he steps up. And they're like, okay, is he going to shoot? Is he going to pass? And he makes the perfect pass to Brock Besser there, who redirects it home. You know, that's the power of JT Miller. You got another, you know, game where maybe he's not his physical self, because obviously he's dealing with something, but he's still able to make an impact. He's still able to, in 16 minutes and 20 seconds of ice time, he's able to get you a goal and two assists. And what I liked about, you know, the two goals that, A, the power play goal, the 5-2 goal is one thing, but even that power play goal that he scores early on in the game himself, the 2-0 goal, it was fluid. There was movement on both of those goals. There's some interchanging. You know, on that Besser goal, he's at the top and he moves over to the left-hand side. On his goal, the 2-0 goal, he's in tight and, you know, Quinn Hughes is given a path to the net and just a great reaction by JT. So, of course, he's not 100%. We see that. You know, maybe there was even a couple of moments where he's not passing the puck the way you'd expect him to. There's some passes have zip on them. Some of them don't. He's clearly, we all know that he's dealing with something. But the fact that he's able to make a difference, and most importantly for this team, you know, talking about the power play heading into this one, a heck of a job on the power play. They take advantage and on the power play, on the man advantage, go 2-for-3 against a team that hadn't allowed a power play goal against on home ice. I think that's a huge stride, a huge step in the right direction, and JT Miller was central to all of that.
Kevin Lankinen does it again. His revenge game against the Chicago Blackhawks winds up turning away 31 shots. Less than three, but nevertheless, we're keeping an eye on this modified goalie competition here, but it does feel like he's really starting to take the stranglehold.
Yeah, what I love about his play, guys, is that he's aggressive, but not overly aggressive, right? When the shot is coming in from the point or there's nobody on the flanks, he's really a top of the blue paint. He's out there. He's being aggressive. He's square to the shooter. But, of course, if there is somebody on the flank, he plays a little bit deeper. I think there was an opportunity, it must have been in the second period, on Craig Smith with the blocker, where Smith is right in the middle of the ice, and the Canucks did have some breakdowns occasionally, especially in that first period where maybe there's a little bit room in the middle of the ice, as they're not protecting the rail in certain situations, as Rick Tocchet calls it. But Lankinen just so solid, where he's cutting down those angles. He's aggressive when he can be, but he's not flopping. He's making himself look big. So, you know, I mentioned it at the beginning of this road trip, where ideally you want to see one of these goaltenders get the opportunity and grab this job. And Kevin Lankinen's done exactly that. Sure, his save percentage is going to take a bit of a hit here, but when you go into the game 9.53, that's all right. You know, that's going to happen. I think there's a level of confidence in his game right now, and you hope he keeps it up. But as of right now, yeah, this job is his, and it's pretty clear cut to me.
Yeah, it so far is, and we'll see what happens on Saturday. But I would guess we see Lankinen again, but we'll see what happens here in a few days. Randeep, great stuff, man. Appreciate it as always, and look forward to chatting with you again very soon.
All right, guys, and I have to make one correction. Bick, I think you were on this on Twitter, but Archie Benz did not pick up his assist. They took it away from him.
Yeah.
Neil Zoman ended up, so I have to correct myself since we mentioned it on the broadcast.
Yeah.
Because so, my Twitter mentions are filling up saying, you liar, so I have to, yeah, put that on the record.
Hey, we blame the NHL. They're the ones who credited
it was so weird.
Yeah.
The replay shows you that he didn't touch it, but no. I was like, all right, maybe. Maybe there's like a... yeah. A glance of his skate or something like that, but there you
maybe
go.
Maybe he looked at it really well, you know, like he manifested the puck going over. Hey, great stuff, man.
He's got a cousin working in stats in Chicago, by the sounds of it.
Sounds like it, man, doing everything they can.
Try to pull a fast one in the stats department.
Like, no, it's not happening.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Randy. That is the game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $8,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll take your phone calls on the other side, plus your text messages, and a lot of love on the text inbox for a number of Canucks. Like, I think this is a game, if you ask the question, who do you think the best player was for the Canucks, mm-hmm, you're going to get a lot of different answers, and that's what we're seeing so far in the text inbox. One guy we haven't spoken about, but getting lots of reaction, is Elias Pettersson. Brandon and DT Van says, Petey looking good tonight, breakout is coming. Austin and Langley said Pettersson looking dangerous all game, just couldn't score, but looked really good. And this one here says, I got to say, this one here says, Petey looking good tonight.
Sorry.
Breakout is coming, as I mentioned, and there's one you have.
Yeah, Taylor North Van, Petey's looking confident. Not too sure how like DeBrusk fit with Besser, Miller, but hopefully things click soon and unsigned. Petey's best game by a country mile. No issues if he keeps playing like this.
Yeah, some people still wondering, like, when is he going to score? Has no goals through six. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Honestly.
But he played a good game. We'll talk more about it later,
sure.
But he played a strong game tonight. I saw some people texting in saying he's been invisible. I'm like, I don't know about that for tonight's game, but hey. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and some people have a very high threshold for beauty, and I guess Pedersen's game wasn't beautiful enough, so we'll see how it goes. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of your takes as the show goes on. We'll hear from the head coach, plus we'll break down every goal the Canucks scored in a 6-3 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks to wrap up a four-game road trip, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More next on Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Connor Garland into the Blackhawk end. Forced wide by Vlasic to the corner. Protects the puck and leaves for Pedersen down low. Now to Hughes at the right point with a wrist shot. Tipped on by Miller. Rebound in front. Garland scores! Connor Garland, Johnny on the spot, digs it free and into the back of the net after Pedersen found him at the left circle. Peter Mrazek is arguing he was interfered with, but he was totally out of his crease when Garland tucked it into the net. And the Canucks make it 4-2 with 4:43 left in the first.
And Mrazek is not happy, still talking to the referees, but Connor Garland celebrating as the Canucks attack from the right-hand side. Garland starts to play himself, and the puck ends up at the point. Shot goes through, deflected once, and a good battle by Elias Pettersson right in front of Mrazek, and he's outside the blue paint. Mrazek is outside of that blue paint himself, and there's a battle that ensues, and Pettersson does just a good job of knocking the puck from his stick over to Connor Garland, who deposits in there. That's not goaltender interference to me. That's Peter Mrazek out of his crease, and the Canucks lead 4-2.
Canucks go on to win 6-3 over the Blackhawks in Chicago, and this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. You can also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. It's Sathya Shaw with Bick Nizar. We are going to hear from the Canucks head coach as soon as that becomes available to us, the post-game audio. We'll break down exactly all the goals and how they all happened as the show goes on, but before we do that, let's get some reaction from Canucks fans who are very excited their team followed up a three-game losing streak with a three-game winning streak tonight.
650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Glenn from Ottawa. Chelsea Dagger just doesn't cut the same when it's used when we rack up six goals against them. Colin from Caribou. This is a take here. Garland sure does take the sting out of the OEL deal. That guy never takes a shift off. Jesse from Bear Mountain, injured Miller still gets 3 points, absolute stud. And this one, I visibly see Petey gaining confidence day by day. Good game from him. Actually, I should say it's good game from him.
Good game. Yeah.
The multiple O good.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, in Sterling in Calgary says Pedersen had a great night, lots of effort, board work, winning faceoffs, won the faceoff on the Besser goal, also had a screen on the Besser goal, also had a good screen on the JT Miller goal because he screens across on the Hughes shot, hits the glove of Mrazek, goes off the board, and then JT puts it in. So a good observation there. And this continues to say might take a bit more time, but Pedersen will be as good as ever at some point. So fans have to remember, young players struggle sometimes. Mention the Sedins and Naslin as well. That's Sterling and Calgary. So a lot more support on the text inbox for Elias Pettersson. My guy Pardeep, though, says, Petey is the Canucks version of Timo Werner. That's, if you're a Chelsea fan, I really hope not.
Or,
Timo
or
could
a
not,
Tottenham fan?
I mean, I don't care about that. But I mean, as a Chelsea fan, it hurts more, you know?
To be fair, most people don't.
I mean, what was that line from...
I can't say it. You can't say that one. But from In Bruges?
In Bruges. It's like the best line, and it encapsulates Tottenham perfectly. Not exactly good, but not, you know, just Tottenham. All right, anyways, we'll leave it at that. Thanks for Pardeep texting in. Our keep thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll hit more of it as the show goes on. But let's go to the phone boards, 604-280-0650. Let's start things off in New York. Bikram called in last time. Bikram's on it again this time. Thanks for calling in, man. What are your thoughts here tonight after a 6-3 Canucks win?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing excellent. Great, man.
Great, good. Yeah, I was in BC when I called last, but now I'm actually in New York. just wanted to say, you know, very happy with the general manager, Quinn Hughes, with the signing of Sherwood. So huge props to him. Number two, you know, I know the team played quite well. I watched the game. But I'm quite concerned about the D-Corps. Like, team hasn't really played many good teams yet, so just kind of want to get your guys' thoughts if you kind of feel the same or it's too early to make that judgment.
Thanks, guys. Hey, thanks for the phone call. And honestly, I understand the concern because tonight it was a bit of a tough night in their own zone for Myers and Susie. They had a couple of tough moments. I didn't think it was as bad as, you know, some would make it out to be. I thought Branstrom and Desharnais, for the most part, were pretty good tonight. Desharnais had one moment he got caught up ice.
That was on a weird line change.
That's pretty much, I can only point out the one, essentially, right? That's the one. Yeah. I thought Hughes and Hronek, as far as their overall defensive play tonight and controlling the game, was their cleanest game. I don't know if there were too many scoring chances when Hughes was on the ice against tonight. Like, I think this was maybe their cleanest game, but we all know that Hughes and Hronek are going to be a good pair. It's about everything else. I understand the concerns. I do think we are going to see better from Susie. We will see better from Myers. But ultimately, I think we all agree, everybody knows, if this team is going to truly contend in the postseason, they probably need another defenseman. Do you need that defenseman today? Do you need it next week? Probably not, but maybe by the deadline. And have you seen, are you concerned enough that you can wait that long? I'm not sure I'm concerned enough about it yet, but absolutely, the Canucks are going to need to add to the blue line at some point this season.
Yeah.
I think everybody agrees on this.
Now, it was unique circumstances last year, but the Zadorov acquisition was end of November, November 30th, if I recall correctly.
Yeah,
so
now,
the timeline from then, I'm not saying there's an absolute necessity to get it done here, but if they trend towards the playoffs by the trade deadline, you'd expect them to be in the market for a D-man. But that just shows, like, you're still at least 5 weeks away from making acquisitions, at least at the earliest.
100%. And I think here's the thing, like, it's just like we talked about when the season began, the Canucks lost three in a row. They've won three in a row. It's still early in the season.
Yeah.
And just, you know, and we had some pushback after they lost the first three games. We're like, it's only three games in. They picked up, you know, 2 points out of three. It's not great, but you win the next game, you're 500. People texting us, what about the start? It's supposed to be a good start. And it's like, well, we're early. The start's about the first 10, 15 games. And this is positive, but we're only six games in. And I'd be careful in wanting declarative answers on what this team truly is already and also what they need or don't need on the blue line. We need the season to breathe a little bit more. I totally get it. There's certain things on the radar, no doubt, that they have to improve. You want to see improve, but we're so early into the season. Like, this text here says, are we that good or are they that bad? Well, the Blackhawks are going to be good and bad. Like, they're not a good hockey team. They have talent. On any given night, they may explode. Bedard goes supernova and they might win and they're dangerous, but they're not a good hockey team. And just because the Canucks played, you know, they played one of their better games on the road trip doesn't mean that they figured it out, but it's positive. It's good. Like, it's a good start to the season so far. Now they have 8 points in six games. They're in a good position. Now you have a few games at home. I think we still need a lot more information to truly know what this team is and what they lack and what they truly have to improve. But I do understand the concerns about the blue line.
Are you saying the start of the season is like opening a wine bottle?
Oh, yeah. Right? You got to let it breathe a little bit.
You got to let it breathe.
You can't just pour it and drink it right away.
You got to smooth out those tannins, whatever the tannins are. I'm not a big wine drinker.
Yeah.
But you just got to smooth out those tannins and then, you know, just enjoy it, and so get through the start, obviously, and yeah, as you mentioned, you'll have a better picture through 15, 20 games, and other teams' motivations can change through 15, 20 games, but sticking to what happened here tonight, yeah, it wasn't clean from Susie and Myers. I would say more Susie than Myers tonight.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Taylor Hall goal doesn't look great for Taylor Myers, but like stuff like that.
The puck bounced over a stick. Like, that to me,
it happens.
I know people even were on Susie for not getting the puck out. He rimmed it around. I thought Baines actually made a good play to get a skate on the puck, and he went over to Myers to get the bump play to go out. It just bounces off a stick. I mean, over a stick. That play I don't have issues with, but there are other plays where both guys were problematic.
The Donato goal was one I look at. And, like, it starts with a Susie retrieval, and he's got time to make a play, ends up just throwing it up the wall to Vlasic, and he gets knocked back in. And then could even have been better on Dickinson on that play. But it was the penalty, too. That's the one that he was out there for 40 seconds. It's just a lazy penalty, and when he could have, and especially when Rick Tocchet harps on this point, we've seen guys do it this season, box out on the backside, just box that guy out, and it's Foligno that gets in, and just a lazy trip. It's moments like that, and I got more than enough faith in Carson Soucy.
Those are things I'd imagine he will clean up. We saw enough from him last year that we know he's better than this, right? And it's like we saw with Pettersson, even tonight, at the end of the day, I mean, he had an assist. He has 3 assists in 6 games, but we know there needs to be more, right? There more has to come, but you're seeing his game get better, but he's not the best version of himself yet. I don't know if any Canuck is the best version of themselves right now. I mean, you can give Lankinen a lot of credit too. Sherwood's been fantastic, but still very early in the season and a lot of room for growth team-wise and for a lot of individuals, despite the fact they just won tonight and have gone on a 3-game losing streak, a winning streak. This one here says, homegrown Heinen looking good. He certainly did look good tonight, scoring his 2 first goals as a Vancouver Canuck. We'll get to more of your thoughts coming up in a bit, but let's get to the phone boards and let's go to Port Alberni, where we have Aiden on the line. Aiden, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts tonight?
Hey, this is my first time calling in this.
Welcome.
This year there.
And, rookie lap, here we go.
And yeah, I like how they start. I like how they're starting, honestly. Like 3 wins, 3 losses. But, you know, 2 of those losses came in the overtime. So, you know what? They only have 1 regular season loss of or 6 games. So not a bad start. I like how they play on the road better than they play at home so far. I think they have a lot more like depth on the road and stuff, and they're scoring goals. Scoring goals is a big part, and they know how to put the puck in the back of the net. And both goaltenders so far, I think, have been doing a good job shutting the door. So I like how they're playing this year, and after the postseason run they had last year, I think we're bound for another one. So hopefully we can go farther and hopefully we can keep up the good streak and hopefully win a lot more hockey games coming up here.
Hey, Aiden, great stuff as always, man. Thanks for your phone call. That's Aiden in Port Alberni calling in, you know, hoping that the team keeps getting better and improving and hopefully does as time goes on here. Let's take one more phone call before we hit the break. Let's go to North Van where we have Stuart on the line. Stuart, what's going on, buddy? What are your thoughts here, man?
Take my call. I last time I spoke to you, it was Game 7 against the Oilers, where I'm pretty sure I'll be honest, I cried myself to sleep that night. But I digress. I hope you guys are doing well. You know, it's funny how in the span of 6 games, it feels like this province has aged, you know, 20 years and then regressed 20. It's like a Benjamin Button of the hockey process here. But it's great to see that after the first 3 games, it looked like the boys just as a team got pissed off because, you know, from that Calgary game onwards, you could see that it was slipping out of their hands. And so it's just great to see that, you know, the usual suspects, as we call them, are getting back to basics. So, I mean, Miller is always going to be Miller. He's just what more can you say about him, right? And then just something I noticed tonight that's key, I think, for going forward. You know, some of the callers have talked about our defense and just maybe where it's not exactly a hit, maybe a miss. It's nice to see Quinn Hughes have a game that's under 20 minutes because I was worried going forward, you know, until the whole Demko thing happens, when do we get him back, if Petey gets going. I was worried that, you know, Hughes would just be burning himself out before Halloween, that, you know, the Miller injury, however slight it is, could hinder him, but they're going gangbusters. You got Connor Garland, who honestly just Mr. Consistent Steady Eddie. The guy is just always there. As soon as we get Joshua back, you know he's going to join the party. Something I'd just like to have you guys and your opinions on is going back to last year when we all remember hearing that maybe if we got to Dallas in the 3rd round, we might see Demko. I never really heard a lot of follow-up from anyone regarding that. Was that like a bluff? Was that just something the team was going to say? Because if we made it to Dallas, you know everyone will be looking for Thatcher. So it's just strange how over those many months, over the summer, it's kind of changed. And the whole Ian Clark thing, and like, was there something there? Was maybe off-season rehab something that the team didn't like Ian pushing Thatcher too much? I just love to hear your guys' thoughts. Like, honestly, it's a question nobody knows except maybe, you know, Aquilini, Thatcher, and the coach. But I'll hang up. Thank you, guys. Look forward to many of my, you know, inane rambling calls. And, yeah, take care.
Thanks for the phone call, Stuart. So Demko addressed this because he was asked about this when he met with the media, like, hey, was there really a chance for you to play? And he said, as a goalie, as a competitor, you're always pushed to play. Was that actually going to happen or not remains a bit of a question, but he was certainly pushing for it. It was a goal in mind, and he was probably pushing himself too far, you know? And did that lead to any issues? I mean, who knows? This offseason, the Ian Clark stuff, we haven't really gotten an answer on it, but, you know, we've heard certain reports and certain inklings that maybe it was a workload thing to some degree, maybe a different philosophy, but I don't think Ian Clark would have changed his roles if he didn't come to the organization and say he can't do the goalie job every day. It's not like the Canucks sat down and said, hey, we got to move on from Ian Clark. Ian Clark went to the team and said, I can't do the goalie job every single day anymore because of physical limitations and some surgery needed to get done. But he's willing to do some of it part-time, but move into a higher capacity role. The Canucks said no. Would that have happened if he doesn't have the issues? I don't know. I don't think so. So I'd be careful with assuming that, you know, it was like, oh, we were trying to get Ian Clark out. But I do think it's fair to wonder if the philosophy on how to handle the goalies, workload, training, there was a different philosophy that led them to wanting to move on entirely, essentially, right? So I think that's a fair thing to kind of wonder here. But as far as him actually playing, I don't know if he actually would have played in the playoffs. It seems more wishful thinking than actual reality.
And just to get back to Stewart's point about Quinn Hughes' minutes tonight being limited under 20, so those minutes have to go somewhere. Vinny Desharnais, 19 minutes and a plus one, ends up blocking two shots as well, throwing two hits. Philip Peronik was the one up over 21 minutes. Carson Soucy played 20. Eric Brännström, who's everyone's favorite in the text inbox, up over 14 minutes, gets the assist on the Suter goal as well. And also six shot attempts from Eric Brännström on top of two block shots and two giveaways as well.
Yeah, so a pretty eventful game there from Eric Brännström tonight. And we'll see what the head coach has to say about him. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of your reaction. We'll break down more of what we saw here tonight. A 6-3 Canucks win in Chicago against the Blackhawks. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. You are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Teddy Bluger wins the opening faceoff, and the Canucks get it to center. Danton Heinen lifts it to the Chicago line. Seth Jones tried to clear. Heinen gets it left corner for Bluger. Centering pass tip behind the Blackhawk net. Sherwood's after it on the right wing. Hit into the boards by Wyatt Kaiser. And Nick Foligno can't clear. Comes to Sherwood, right circle. Across the zone. Into the slot. They score! Bluger to Heinen. And the Canucks lead 1-0. Just 21 seconds into the first period. What a start. And Danton Heinen has his first goal as a Vancouver Canuck.
The kid from Langley is on the board as the energy line for the Vancouver Canucks gets to work right off the bat. Aggressive forecheck by Kiefer Sherwood. Starts the play. He gets it back from the point. Hits Teddy Bluger, who sets it up perfectly for Danton Heinen, who's in the middle of the ice. Stick on the ice. Just a little patient play. Goes around Mrazek and beats him to make it 1-0 Vancouver.
Danton Heinen, his first goal as a Vancouver Canuck, grew up cheering for the Canucks. Two goals tonight, helping them win 6-3 in Chicago over the Blackhawks to wrap up a four-game road trip. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Heinen got some love. This one here says, if Sherwood is getting 72, how many goals is Brock going to get, Sat? It's a joke about, you know, Kiefer Sherwood and how many goals he was going to score. But Brock Besser, four goals in six games, Bick. The general manager, Patrick Alvin, you know, maybe tongue-in-cheek, but maybe also serious, challenged him to score 50 so far this year. Well, I mean, if early season goal scoring is any indication, Bick, he might be on his way to get 60 if he keeps this rate going. Now, I don't think he will be scoring 55 or whatever he's on pace for, but a great start for Brock Besser goal scoring wise.
That goal was so clever too.
Yeah.
The entire sequence, Pedersen wins the draw, and there's been a couple of Texans say, hey, you got to give Pedersen some credit for winning the draw and also hooking the puck also to the wall. And then you watch this play, as that puck goes up the wall, it's Hughes who comes downhill. So Besser fills in up at the point for Hughes, and it comes around and it goes across to JT, and Brock goes right to the bumper.
Yeah.
And just stops and kind of waits for seemingly a set play happen. And you can watch Foligno and Dickinson almost freeze at the rotation by Hughes and Miller. And,
yeah,
and Hughes drops it for Miller, who's now coming downhill. And all eyes, you know, Foligno's stuck on the weak side because he's worried about Hughes. Dickinson's looking at Miller, who's now coming downhill. None of the D-men have reattached themselves. And it's such a nice play by Miller. And Brock just kind of redirects it. looks easy, but you can see the high level of attention that is created by Hughes and Miller at the top, and it just opens up space for a really natural goal scorer who just deflects it towards the net.
It's almost like a pick and roll, that exchange at the top with Hughes, and or pick and pop, you would say, because of the way Miller pops out and then drives and throws it out to Besser. But that's a play that they've done a lot in the offensive zone, and it paid off in a big way. So let's work our way back to the first goal of the game. You heard the call coming in. Danton Heinen finishing off a nice passing play 21 seconds into the game. I mean, I guess there isn't too much on this, but I know you wanted to highlight a couple things on the Heinen's first goal of the game to give the Canucks the 1-0 lead.
Yeah, it was nice for him to get the account, and we just heard it on the way in too. You can see this play. Like, Seth Jones is slow to move the puck, and it's Sherwood, one of his 12 hits. I don't know if this one registered. He does so much. But nevertheless, like, he's quick on him, and so when you're slow to release the puck and Sherwood's on the ice, he's going to cause disruption, and he's the one that does it, and Hronek keeps it, and then just a quick bang, bang, bang pass between Sherwood, Blueger, and Heinen, and it's multiple cross-slot movements here, either by the passing or by Heinen skating across the cross-slot and just a easy deposit into the net for Heinen.
Yeah, that line, some good chemistry, and it started off gangbusters, giving the Canucks a 1-0 lead. The Canucks go on the power play after Jason Dickinson tripped JT Miller, and JT Miller draws the penalty and also finishes off a rebound chance to make it 2-0 at the time. But this is also something that we've seen something different we saw on a look from the power play. You had JT Miller playing the right half wall. You had Connor Garland playing the left half wall, so flipping sides for JT Miller. Elias Pettersson found himself on the bumper, and that created a nice little interchange between him and Besser, and the movement on that first power play was outstanding, and that led to them scoring the goal on the man advantage.
Yeah, I'm curious if it's triggers, right? If Garland gets a puck on his wall, does that mean Pettersson can stay in the bumper? Right. When it got around to Miller, Pettersson and Besser switch.
Mm-hmm.
And once that puck goes back up top, Pettersson's now net front. Besser is now in the bumper. And Quinn Hughes shoots it, and JT Miller kind of creeps in from the outside and is there for the rebound off the backboards, and quickly made it 2-0.
And Pettersson did a good job of flashing across on Mrazek on that Quinn Hughes shot. And I don't think the shot hit Pettersson, but it kind of goes off Mrazek's glove and goes off the board. And obviously, JT Miller makes no mistake from a very tight angle. It's a very nice finish from JT Miller. Chicago made it 2-1. Ryan Donato off a bit of a turnover throw. Jason Dickinson throws the puck in the middle of the net. Donato scores. And then Danton Heinen got his second goal. And this is the play, Bick, where we talk about Kiefer Sherwood, whether it's intelligence, whether it's luck. I would call it
intentional.
I would say it's intentional because of how the play happened. And it shows, Bick, and I know you want to run through it, it shows a high level of IQ, but even higher level of processing to tag up that quickly off the faceoff.
So it's great energy by him off the faceoff in a neutral zone to get behind, pick off the pass or pick off the draw that Chicago wins. And yeah, as he's entering the zone, it gets poked away and he brings it back into the zone, but lifts his stick away from the puck as it's crossing the line and then tags up, and then is able to take the puck. It's similar to, I think, 3 or 4 seasons ago, Charlie McAvoy did it to Vancouver as well, where he brought it across right to the blue line, took the stick off the puck. I think it got a player tagged up, and then he repossessed it. And he doesn't lose control over it, but he's not in possession at any point. And so in this scenario, it's exactly the same thing. And I think I saw some quotes on Twitter, Luke Richardson saying, you know, agree to disagree on whether that's offside or not.
But hey, the rule is the rule.
The rule is the rule. I'm not a big fan of the rule.
But it is what it is.
I'll be consistent, but it is what it is.
Yeah, the rule is what it is. So that made it 3-1. Taylor Hall scored a goal off the turnover we talked about. The puck bounces over Myers' stick. Hall jumps on it. Murphy gets it, throws it to Hall, who beats Lankinen to make it 3-2. And then it was Connor Garland restoring a 2-goal lead. And I mean, this was just a nice passing play from JT Miller and getting a shot off. I mean, and Elias Pettersson getting a shot on a goal that creates a rebound, and then Connor Garland finishes it off.
Yeah, Hughes gets a shot off a high in the zone, one of many. Quinn Hughes got through tonight. He ends up taking 5 shots.
JT tipped that shot from Hughes, and then Pettersson ends up corralling the puck afterwards.
And it goes right to Connor Garland, who just easily slots it in for the 4-2 lead, which held all the way through till the third.
Yeah, you talked about the Brock Besser goal, the exchange with JT Miller and Quinn Hughes, and then Pugh Suter. That's the goal where people thought that Archdeep Baines picked up an assist, but it wasn't. Niels Ullmann wins the draw clean. Brännström gets it and throws the puck at net, takes a bounce, finds Suter backdoor, who just puts it in. I think that's pretty much explains that one there, and that's how the Canucks scored their six goals tonight. Was it convincing overall? I know a lot of fans were happy with how the Canucks played, but how does a head coach feel about how the team fared in Chicago tonight after making it a three-game winning streak on the road? And here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Rick, you talk about having a good start. How about 21 seconds in? What'd you think of this game tonight?
Yeah, and I like that fact that we scored those six goals. It's nice to get some offense from through the depth of the team. Nice to get power play goals. So yeah, overall you're happy. Overall, I'm happy with the game, but I still think we gotta, the guts of the ice is something we're not as good as last year. We gotta really start to figure that out. I think we're giving up too many opportunities in the middle of the ice. But overall, I mean, scoring six goals, I'm happy.
Sherwood, Heinen, Bluger, that line, especially in that first period. What can you say about them and how they connected?
Yeah, they're close together. They they were playing the right way. Very rarely were they out there with odd man rushes. I think they're just in good spots, and when you're in good spots, good things happen. That goal, it was a tic-tac toe goal, but it was just they were close together.
Brännström getting his first point as a Canuck. How is he just fitting in with this group?
I thought it was his best game. I thought he distributed the puck well. He was really good. He skated the puck out. A couple of nice passes. I was pleased with his game tonight, especially on the breakouts.
Could you have imagined that Langley, considering he wasn't even in the organization when training camp opened, would come do what he's done?
I mean, obviously got Patrick and and Jim, grabbing him. That's huge. That's a huge acquisition. I mean, like I said, every start he's had, he's been really good. I didn't know much about him. Didn't know his career much, but he looks really solid, confident. He says he likes the system, but we're not there quite yet because we're giving up too many stuff in the middle. But he's just an unflappable guy.
What was your reaction on the bench when you first saw the close to offside play that Sherwood was able to touch up on? Did you recognize that it was onside immediately, or did you think it was coming off?
I honestly didn't. I was looking at it for a bit. I thought I was wrong because I thought if you have possession. But I think it was a double-up, tag-up thing. I didn't know that. So, I didn't know about that.
Just a heads-up play from Kiefer is one of those things where sign they were playing the right way, maybe?
Yeah, I just the overall how it went down. That was a big, it's a big goal for us.
You talked this morning about this being the end of a road trip, but there was still business to take care of, even though you wanted to go home. Was this kind of putting the exclamation point on that or the emphasis on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's, usually people say that last game on the road is always the toughest. I thought the guys, for the most part, stayed in it. And obviously, when you score six goals, you got a good chance of winning the hockey game.
Well, obviously they were two of your best players last year, too, but are you getting even more from Phil and Quinn right now than you did even last season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they get the puck at our end really quickly, and usually when we can get something off the rush. So I think that's what they're really doing really well. And possession time, obviously, when they're on the ice and we have the puck in the OZP, they're hemming teams in there a little bit. So we've been on the other side of it. When you're on the ice, you're defending all the time. And you're changing, so you can't get a sustained forecheck. Well, that's what they do when they're on the ice. They're maintaining the puck, making the other team to defend, and that's a good thing.
Quinn won the Norris last year, and he said before this season that he thought he could.
Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
He thought he could be better. Did you think he could be even better than what?
Well, I think Huggy's the type of kid, or Hughes is the type of kid where he's chasing perfection, right? I don't think he ever sits back and, he's thinking of teams are going to game plan. So what do I do if they do this? Like, that's how he thinks. That's, we actually talk about that. Like, if a team's going to be high on him, what's the next play? And that's why he's chasing perfection. And, he's always looking to get better.
Is that common to other great players that you've seen?
And
played with or coached?
100%. They're never satisfied. The most recent guys, and it's like a Sidney Crosby, he's always trying to, how do I, you know, he changes workout, you know, he changes his patterns, he changes what he does at practice, and I think that he just would chase perfection, and Hughes is the same type of guy. They have that mindset.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium after a 6-3 Canucks victory. And it's brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And the head coach, as we kind of suspected, he was happy with them winning, but certain parts of their game that he wants them to do better. The guts of the ice, so they're not as good as protecting the middle of the ice as they were last year. Have to figure that out, but overall very happy. And, of course, had some good things to say about the Bluger line, Brännström, and gave Jim and Patrick a lot of credit for nabbing Kevin Lankinen, who's been dynamite between the pipes for them.
Yeah, and you know, some love towards the new favorite all of a sudden. Erik Brännström, his best game, especially on the breakouts, making some nice passes, which is the biggest feature of his game, right? His mobility, his ability to retrieve and just activate as well. There was a couple of moments where you could see the first pass and how quickly he was up the ice as well, because he's got a green light, and you know that's when he's at his best. And so for the people that have been texting in much about Erik Brännström, there you go, a little love from the head coach.
Yeah, JD to Carhog says Brännström is unreal. So a lot of people are loving Brännström so far as he continues to impress in his early limited showing. I mean, still played under 14 minutes tonight, but in the minutes he has played in, it's been very solid so far.
It was 14:02. Give him his love.
There you go, 14:02. So you got over 14 minutes there, just over 14 minutes for Erik Brännström. Sterling in Calgary says, I'd like to see Erik Brännström given more opportunity at some point with good skating, responsible Hronek. The way Hronek and Hughes have played together, I know Hughes wants to stick with Hronek. I wouldn't mind if you split him up from time to time. But what we need to see from Brännström before we talk about him playing with Hronek is, can he first handle bigger minutes, some tougher roles? And if he hits those markers, then we can start looking at him playing up the lineup. But there's a big jump going from playing pretty sheltered third pair of minutes, 14 minutes in a game, to all of a sudden playing on the top two pairs and playing in every situation and being in some adverse situations. So I'd be careful, but is this like the piano music signing us off here in the evening? No. I was like, something, what happened?
I wasn't sure if like Brännström was like a brand of piano or something like that. Is this a deep reference that I'm not aware of? But just to your point of, you know, strength of competition as well, the Chicago Blackhawks are not going to provide the toughest matchups for him. Like, he's not going up against Connor Bedard very often. I'm just trying to bring it up here. Yeah, he spent 1 minute and 58 seconds against Connor Bedard tonight, and it didn't really go well. It was one team shot attempt, 4-6 against. But he was out there against Donato. He was out there against Patrick Maroon and Lucas Reichel and Taylor Hall a little bit as well. And yeah, he feasted on some of those matchups, but again, as the strength of the competition of teams goes up, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on. But as many people have texted in, they are undefeated in the Brännström era, so fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. This text says, this Lankinen looks pretty good. Hope he can keep it up. And I'm worried they pressure Demko to come back too soon before he's healed, but maybe not if Lankinen plays as well as he does. How about this for a reference? If Clark was Heisenberg, I hope the Canucks found Pinkman. Otherwise, the Canucks goalies will never cook. That's some text. All right, we'll get to more of your thoughts on the Canucks Central post-game show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on Sportsnet 650.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the post-game show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Pettersson wins the faceoff of the Blackhawks zone. Left wing for Quinn Hughes. He'll drop it back to Besser. High slot. Now to the right wing for JT Miller. Back to Hughes. Top of the point. Leaves for Miller. Just held into the line. Sends it in front. Tip. They score. Brock Besser in the slot. Deflects it past Mrazek on the glove side. And the Canucks make it 5-2 with their second power play goal of the night.
The Canucks strike within 15 seconds of the start of this power play. Very direct off the faceoff win.
Well, I think Huggy's the type of kid, or Hughes is the type of kid where he's chasing perfection, right? He, you know, I don't think he ever sits back and, you know, he's thinking of like, okay, like teams are in a game plan. So what do I do if they do this? Like, that's how he thinks. That's, you know, we actually talk about that. Like, if a team's going to be high on him, what's the next play? And that's why he's chasing perfection. And yeah, I mean, he's always looking to get better.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet on Quinn Hughes after a 6-3 win over the Blackhawks in Chicago. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We heard some piano music. Eddie played some piano music as he was trying to find a clip, and the people in the text inbox are reacting. This one here from Renfrew Marco. Theme music for the next 650 special. Thoughts on things with Satyar Shah.
Postgame piano got me in my feelings watching the Flames pretend to be a good team.
Yeah, the Flames are now down 3-2 at home against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Handful of minutes to go.
Yeah, we'll see how that one goes. They have not yet lost a game regulation.
But just to illustrate the early season volatility here, Sat, if the result holds up, Canucks would be 1 point back of Calgary on even games.
Yeah. So, I mean, and haven't really lost too much ground here or any ground really, despite coughing up the lead, the 3-goal lead on the first game of the season against the Calgary Flames to lose it in extra time.
Although I guess Vegas in line to get 9 points themselves, but they'd have an extra game played.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, the only reason
we're looking at the playoff line already.
The only thing that would concern me about the standings is if the Canucks were 6 games in and had like 1 point.
Sure.
Or like 0 points. Like what happened 2 years ago, for instance, right? Like where they played themselves out of it on that 6-game road trip. And they haven't done that. And that's really the only thing here. So we'll see the Edmonton Oilers. They had a 2-goal lead on the Carolina Hurricanes, went on to lose in overtime against the Carolina Hurricanes. So the early season struggles continue for the Edmonton Oilers as well. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650, 650. KG says, 3 in a row, Lank the Tank. We going streaking. So the streaking jokes are coming back here. And the coach was very happy with Kevin Lankinen's game, as you would expect. What else are you seeing on the text inbox here, Bick?
650, 650. This one from Travis. Great road trip. Can't wait to add Demko and Joshua and have Miller back taking draws. When we add Joshua, what line would you put him on? And there's been a lot of texts about this, of just not when Joshua returns, but, you know, what do they look like in that stage here? Many, many texts asking us. So, you know, the emergence of Garland, I'm very interested if it makes sense to reunite Garland and Joshua.
You don't want to do that?
I'm just curious. Like, he's been so steady now here in the top six.
Sure.
And producing is the other element. I'm just curious. Like,
do you like that combo with Pettersson? As in, like, I like it now. And because even the head coach said, hey, I like them together now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure this is going to stick beyond what we're doing today. I love it in the moment. I need to see more to feel like that's going to be a thing beyond the first bit of the season.
I got to say, there's so much about Connor Garland's game that I feel like has rounded out over the past season and a half.
And tonight I thought, like, you know how we talk about sometimes Garland ends up being the focal point in every line?
Yeah.
It kind of felt like Pettersson was the focal point more than Garland tonight,
yeah.
right? And both guys were playing off each other. So to your point, are we seeing enough stuff here from Garland that, you know, he's... I want to say adjusting, but blending in really well with a player we weren't sure it was going to work with?
Or even if again, the main concern has been, does he have to be the guy on a line? Well, he's showing that he can be the secondary guy on a line, and he's certainly capable of carrying the puck through the neutral zone, winning battles. Honestly, the play he makes, there was a great play on a Hoglander chance in the first period, I believe. And Connor Garland gets pinned along the wall, and yet he still gets his shoulders free, still gets his hands free, his vision is still towards the ice, and he gets this puck inside, I think, to Pettersson, who one touch passes it to Hoglander, and it was the one that barely just missed, and Hoglander ends up getting the wraparound out of it. But it was such a good job of just Garland protecting the puck. I just wonder if maybe he and Miller could go together as well with Besser there, right? You want a forechecker, someone who holds the puck, someone who can get Miller the puck. And with this new style where he's not dominating the puck here, I think that absolutely could work. And, you know, it's not that I don't want to see Garland and Joshua together, but it is going to take a little bit of time for Joshua to get up to speed here and catch up to everyone.
Yeah, and right now, Jake DeBrusk is kind of going through it a little bit, right? And so you have this battle between DeBrusk, Hoglander, really to try to vie for a spot there in the top six. And I think, I don't know, I think that's a good thing because I think Joshua, with the contract he signed, why not give him a look? You know, Jeff in Black Creek says, if we're trying anyone for PD, why not Joshua with PD at some point once he gets back up to speed? I'm not against that, especially in a new season. I'm not against you trying different things, especially with a commitment made to Joshua as a player who's growing and evolving as a player. I think this is the time, early in the season, the first 40 games, experiment with things, try things out. So I don't think any idea, for the most part, is a bad idea right now as far as trying different things.
They're all different, exciting options, right?
Yeah. And it wasn't quite like this. Because last year was like, that trio was so good, Bluger, Garland, and Joshua, that you're like, why break that up?
And because they were the focal point in contributing to wins. Like, that was
the
point.
Exactly.
And especially because we were in a spot, too, of how much do we believe the start of, you know, there was some shaky confidence. So if this was a thing that's working, don't break it up. Suddenly, a year removed from that, you can say, okay, we can experiment because at some point you believe the Canucks will get back on track. Just look at the opening six games, struggle early, win three in a row, and suddenly everything's rosy again. The level of confidence that this team will be at a certain level is different than it was a year ago. And so, you know, while we're mapping out Joshua, right, heard today from Frank Cervelli, could be another 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So you're looking at, let's say, the 10-game mark or 12-game mark. Let's just create a small window here. How many games is it going to take to catch up? So you're probably looking at getting Joshua integrated into a top-six opportunity. What, game 17, game somewhere around there?
You probably want to get to the past the 15-game mark, somewhere in that range. And we'll see with Dakota Joshua. I don't think we're going to see Joshua on Saturday against the Pittsburgh Penguins, but their next game is coming up on Monday against the Carolina Hurricanes. I think the Monday game against Carolina or the Wednesday game against New Jersey, keep an eye on those if he can play in one of those two games. We'll see. That would, you know, the Monday one would put it a week. This yesterday was a week away. A week is Monday. So we'll see if he can be ready for that game. But good news on Dakota Joshua's front. He is getting a lot closer to a return. And we all wish him the best, of course, after going through a really frightening situation ahead of the season beginning.
But just to go back to just illustrate the point, as we talked about with Randeep as well, suddenly, you know, Heinen and Sherwood feel like they can be a pairing in a third line spot, right? And, man, we're throwing a lot of names and a lot of bodies here, but the opportunities are there.
But even Sobek, like, I thought tonight, I know we talked about Baines and he had the assist taken away from him. He shouldn't have had the assist on the goal. Like, it was a bad call. It was the stat keepers made a mistake, right? But that line with Oman, they had some good moments. Mm-hmm. Like, Oman had some good moments. I thought Suter, like, as much as Suter, last year Suter was playing a big chunk of the late season with Miller and Besser.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a quote-unquote guy who played in your first line. Now he's playing in the fourth line. And the fourth line, all of a sudden, you know what? Like, him being part of it, he had some good moments. He set up a really good chance for Bluger. He didn't mean to, but he made a good play behind the net and threw it out to the middle, and Bluger ended up getting a one-time shot off. Now, that wasn't their line, but I thought Suter did a lot of good things. He had the wraparound chance he almost scored on. So even that fourth line with Oman and with Baines, like, they gave a little bit of a bottom line. They had some good moments here tonight, right? Like, they scored that goal. So it's the entire lineup contributing, and I think that's a difference of having a player like Suter, who's a legitimate, you know, top nine NHL player, playing your fourth line. It just elevates everything.
Yeah, and, you know, between the battle is probably between Baines and Oman when Joshua does come back. So tonight, Nils Oman plays 10-41, goes 40% in the draw, and Archie Baines 10-25. But again, it felt like, and we've gotten some text in the inbox just kind of praising him. Again, I just felt like another solid game.
Yeah, and you know what? Pettersson is, even on social media, is getting a lot of love. Desert Dog says Pettersson played the most minutes, controlled the puck, played excellent defensively. The points will come. He had some good defensive moments. You mentioned winning faceoffs, screening the goalie, but he was also in the middle of like 7-8 scoring chances. He had a couple himself. He drew a penalty. He set a few up. He almost scored on a backhand tip chance from Soucy on a nice diagonal pass to the net. He couldn't score on it. He had a wraparound chance he almost scored on. So I thought tonight, in Pettersson, as far as scoring chances, that line had, they probably should have had more goals than they had tonight.
Certainly, and he would have been central to all that. The point I wanted to talk about earlier, and I know it gets brought up about the injury and all this sort of stuff, is, you know, I like to be fair about this stuff. If you're in the lineup, there is a certain expectation for you to produce.
Right.
and like JT's hurt, he gets 3 points, and everyone's willing to shower praise. So, you know, he's downplayed it.
The knee thing, you mean?
Yeah.
Patterson?
Yeah. So if he's downplaying it, I get it. You might be dealing with something, but you know, you do play a certain amount of minutes, and a certain level of production does has to get met at some point. Again, he was good tonight, but it does feel like this has gone on for so long now that no one's really making any more interesting points. It's just like he's just got to get that first goal, and then we can all just kind of take a breath and then get another opportunity to reevaluate where this is actually going. But more than anything, like, he just has to get a goal.
Yeah, well, you know, win or lose or not, Pedersen's still a big topic of conversation on Text Inbox, as you see by the ones that are coming in here. All right, it's time to go to Chicago to welcome in the man we call the triple threat to close this one out. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
I think the last time I came on after an impressive win, you guys were also talking about what's wrong with Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, I don't know if we were talking about what was wrong with him. We were just reading some text messages, and it just lined up that we read a text message praising his game here tonight right before you joined us. I mean, the timing couldn't be any more impeccable. Yes.
It's what we do. It's like we're Sports Talk Radio.
All right. Well, whoever wrote that is going to have to go into hiding. Canucks Twitter is going to be all over. For that Pettersson positivity, look, the guy is... he's got a long way to go. Like, I'm not sure what exactly is wrong with his game. He's not very communicative with the media lately. Never really has been. But I did think tonight was his best game so far. I thought he was a lot more engaged. But it's amazing that Connor Garland has to get Elias Pettersson going, which is basically what seems to be happening right now, because Garland just plays so well night after night, driving possession. So that line I thought was pretty good. They all, you know, with, and I don't know if it was score effect or the game itself, or the fact that the goals came so easily early on. But I think everybody was a little bit slack in the second half of the game, maybe most of the game, once the Canucks got that early lead. But there was, you know, a lot of good signs offensively, and the team is coming home, 3-1-2. And I think had you said that before the season started, you could say, yeah, okay, you know, 8 points out of 12 with 4 of the 6 games on the road. Yeah, that would be pretty good and certainly doable for a team that's trying to prove it's for real. But how we got to this point, it's been quite an adventure for the first 6 games. And if the next 76 are as filled with plot twists and unexpected storylines as this one has been, it's going to be a hell of a season to be in the media covering this team.
It felt like it was the return of the Hughes-Hronek show as well, especially high in the zone. You know, Hughes had that exchange with Miller, but Hronek also gets on the board as well with the first assist on the Heinen play. That ice tilt that they can provide felt like it was back today.
Yeah, mind you, I don't think it was just back today, Bick. I think it's been pretty good. I think this was Hronek's best game, but I think Quinn Hughes, and this is one of the things I'm writing about for Sportsnet tonight, I think Quinn Hughes has been at an even higher level than what he was last year, and I wasn't sure that was possible. I know that he said he was going to be better, but everybody, you know, says that they want to be better, but how much better could you really be when you had the season that he had as a defenseman? Well, I think he has been even better. And tonight it was just absurd. I mean, this is a National Hockey League. No one should dominate a game, or I shouldn't say no one should. It's so hard for anybody to dominate a game, but to dominate a game the way Hughes did, and he only finished with a couple of assists, right? Like, mm-hmm. he's not, when the game settled and you look at the score sheet and you guys have been going through your talking points and people have been texting you about Pettersson and others, I don't think Hughes is necessarily at the top of the conversation, but when you look at his influence
on tonight's game, and I just walked away from the press box because there's a couple of people working. I didn't want to disturb them, and I foolishly forgot my numbers behind. But if I'm remembering correctly, I think the 5-on-5 shots were 14-4 for the Canucks when he was on the ice, which meant in the half a game or so that he wasn't on the ice at 5-on-5, they were something like 21-11 for Chicago. The scoring chances, I think, were 9-3 for the Canucks when Hughes was on the ice, and the high danger chances were 5-1. And by the way, Quinn Hughes was on the ice for the first 5 Vancouver goals, 3 of them at 5-on-5, 2 on the power play, and wasn't on the ice for any of the 3 Chicago goals. It's incredible to have a guy like that on your team who just tilts the ice towards the other team's goal every time he's on. And, you know, I was sitting beside our Sportsnet 650 friend and my colleague Thomas Drance, and he was really raving about Roenick tonight. I still think that when you're playing with somebody who's as good as Quinn Hughes, man, that's going to help your game a lot. As far as Roenick, I do think he was very good, and I do think he's been more engaged this year. And I think to some extent we've seen that since training camp opened. You know, he was one of the guys in Penticton who was kind of setting a pace, setting a tone, setting the intensity every session he was on the ice. And, you know, whether that's because his contract settled, he knows where he's going to be, whether it's because he feels more responsibility because of that contract, maybe it's just, you know, maturity, because he still too is quite a young player. But I think he has been more engaged. But I guess the difference would be for me. Mm-hmm. I thought, yeah, okay, Roenick can be more engaged, and he should be better. And it is, you know, this contract he got, it is a huge investment by the team that they're counting on him to live up to. He's not there yet, mm-hmm. but he can get better and be good value for that contract. So maybe I'm not so surprised that he's taken another step, but I just didn't think, I mean, when you're the best defenseman in the world, how much more room is there between your head and the ceiling to be even yeah. better? And yet Quinn Hughes is even better. And maybe his offensive numbers are not. And he said after the game tonight, you know, maybe his numbers aren't going to get to what they were last year, which, again, going by memory, I think was 17 goals and 92 points. Maybe his numbers aren't going to be that. We've seen how much more he's shooting. And I think it's with his shot, he's going to continue, you know, he's going to get a lot more goals and create more points that way. But it's just everything. It's the puck's hardly ever in their mm-hmm. end, in the Canucks' end now when Hughes is on the ice. And he's moving it, I think, more quickly and spreading it around more than he has in the past. Like, it's not simply the default thing isn't simply get the puck and just start skating with it. Like, he's moving it quickly, and he, of course, at times still does carry it up ice like very few players on planet Earth can. But I just think there's a lot more to his game now in both ends of the ice. I mean, he's so good defensively now that he doesn't have to play in his own zone, because yeah. they get the puck and they break up plays and then they move the puck quickly, and the rest of the shift is down in the other team's end. So it's quite something the way Hughes is playing.
You had a chance to see Rick Tocchet post game in the scrum after the victory. And, you know, he mentioned he was overall happy, but have to figure out how to protect the guts of the ice. Not as good as last year at it. And he's, even the last couple of games, despite winning, he's kind of been like, yeah, but there's certain things we have to clean up. The standards are so much higher, aren't they? And he's a head coach that, as much, even if you win and get results, it's about the process. And he seems still not to be overly enthused fully about where the process is with this team.
Yeah, and you know that in itself is a good sign. And the players were saying the same thing. I know that JT Miller did some kind of scrum, but I actually talked to him on my own briefly before the media herd came over to graze on JT. So I left. So I'm not sure what he said in the scrum, but he told me that tonight wasn't good enough. That you know, yeah, it's nice they scored on their opportunities, but the standard has been set, and it's so much higher than what they've shown. And I think to Tockett's point about the middle of the ice, Lankinen quietly again had to be, you know, one of their best players, or they don't win this game, because he made a bunch of saves. He basically made the saves that Mrazek didn't. And the Canucks got some bounces tonight as well. Let's be honest about that. And again, another big pivotal review going in their favor when it looked initially like, well, you know, that goal wasn't gonna count with Sherwood offside. So, I mean, lots of things went for them tonight, but they still surrendered a lot of scoring chances. And again, to Tockett's point, in the middle of the ice, in the guts of the ice. And last year we saw how they were content to give up things from the perimeter. And, you know, that's why, honestly, a lot of the games there was a disparity in the shots. And they were getting outshot because Canucks weren't worried about teams shooting from, you know, above the circles and from the wings. And I remember Tockett even, you know, after one practice early in the year, kind of not took reporters aside, but got into this off the record discussion about sort of analytics and how the Canucks are graded. And that a lot of times what are shots that seem to be considered scoring chances against them, the Canucks are willingly giving up those shots because they're from the perimeter. They might be, you know, from what seems like a good location for the other team to be shooting from, but the Canucks were willing to give them those areas on the outside and, you know, force them to try and score from there, or allow them to try and score from there. But they didn't give up much in the middle and in front of their zone. And I think we all know that the Myers-Soucy pairing has struggled a bit. The third pairing has been in just transition. You know, they're trying to figure out what their third pairing is going to be. You know, Forbert leaving was something nobody could foresee. The pickup of Brännström, you know, happened on the eve of the season, and he was in the minors. So there's lots of reasons why that they haven't. And I'm just talking about defensemen. We know that defending includes the forwards as well, but there's transition there as well with all the new forwards that they have. You can see why they're not as dialed in systems wise, especially in their own zone, as what they eventually need to be. So that's actually, you know, a very good sign that Tockett and Miller and others, Connor Garland was another who told me the same thing. You know, they know that it may have worked tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks, and it worked Saturday against the Philadelphia Flyers, but it's not going to work this way over the course of a season, especially when you're playing elite teams. And the Canucks, you know, they saw elite teams at the start of this road trip. They didn't see them at the end, but they took advantage of that, scored some goals, got great goaltending from Lankinen, and I think will feel like they've got some momentum going now as they go back home, especially if you think if 3 games ago they're 0-1-2, and you start to think, well, how bad might this get if they don't win in Florida, and now they've lost their first 4 games. You know, we've seen other teams struggle that way at the start, and the pressure gets severe in a hurry in professional sports. So I think what the Canucks have done, they've eased that pressure. They've got some of their confidence back. Certainly offensively, they're rolling there now, but they've got to clean up the defensive half of their game.
I'm excited for Saturday for the return to home, just to see the crowd's reaction to Kiefer Sherwood, who has put up 31 hits in these last three games. And it might not have been the best initial impression, but now that his game is starting to go here, three game point streak here, and just the energy, you were there in person the last two games. Is there a noticeable difference in what we saw from the first two than the last two for Kiefer Sherwood?
Well, I think you know, he's among these, well, it depends on how you count them. And Ratu's already gone, you know, back to the AHL. But right now they've got basically eight new players, and he's one of the eight new players. So I think there's always transition. But he was a guy that you know, they loved getting him, and all being talked about that. And I've said that this guy was a real wild card, because we know he, from watching him against the Canucks with Nashville, we know he plays with that edge, but he's got a really high degree of skill as well. In fact, forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but you know, before the road trip, I talked to Jake DeBrusk about like his impressions of the group and of the guys, and asked that kind of cliche question. Well, is there something like, is there anyone that you see that didn't realize how good he was? You know who he mentioned? Kiefer Sherwood. That, you know, this guy has everything. He can skate, he shoots, he plays with physicality, and he has some pedigree as a scorer. Like, this isn't a guy who's found his ceiling as sort of an energy, physical guy in the NHL. There's a lot there. And I think that line with Bluger and Heinen, I think Heinen is a guy who's really struggled among the new guys to kind of like, what exactly is his place going to be? Where is he going to play? What's his role going to be? I think for now, you know, that looks like a really good trio. And Teddy Bluger's playing great again. So, you know, they're, you know, that looks like a really effective line, and they're showing that it's not just about checking and energy. They can produce offense, and Kiefer Sherwood, near as I can tell, I've been around him for six games. I've talked to him a couple of times, including this morning after the skate. I had a good chat with him. He just seems like one of those guys who's a really good guy and is never going to take a day in this league for granted. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of Alex Burrows in Kiefer Sherwood, even though there's, you know, different types of energy players, but Alex never took a day for granted in the NHL because he worked so hard to get here, beat the odds to get here, and never wanted to be complacent about that. I think Kiefer Sherwood has that same outlook, where this guy's just driven and he's going to do everything he can every game to help his team and show that he not only belongs at this level, but is capable of more. And it's not going to surprise me when he does more than what we've seen.
Ian, great stuff as always. Really glad that we're able to catch up with you a little bit here tonight. I look forward to reading your latest, which will be up on sportsnet.ca, I'm sure, shortly. And we look forward to seeing you back in town when you return.
All right. I'll look forward to seeing you guys in person, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we don't see another overtime or shootout game at Rogers Arena, because it makes it harder for me to get over there to the Jim Robson gondola, but I sure hope that I'll be there with you guys on Saturday.
You won't have to break the speed barrier making that turn from press row to the gondola.
May need oxygen, though. Keep oxygen in the gondola.
We'll see if we can get an extra supply sent up there in time for the post-game show on Saturday. Great stuff, Ian. Right. Get home safely as well. We know Chicago can be a bit of a, you know.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. It's still a little nervy. I got to say, I was a little nervous when I walk out onto Madison Avenue in front of the United Center at, you know, 12:30 or 1 in the morning, and there's nobody around. But it's one of the nice things about Uber. You can wait. You can see them coming on the map and dash out just when they arrive. So
yes.
I'm sure I'll be okay. Thanks for your well wishes, and I'll look forward to catching up with you guys on the weekend.
You got it. Thanks so much, Ian. That is Ian McIntyre from Chicago, from the scene of the Canucks 6-3 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks, coming back home now on a 3-game winning streak. They take on the Pittsburgh Penguins, who just lost in a shootout against the Calgary Flames. Calgary came back and tied it in the dying minutes. Well, there was a minute left or whatever it was when they scored, went into overtime, and Calgary just won in a shootout. So the Flames have still not suffered a regulation loss, and now it's a shootout win for them. So it's been a pretty every single team was in action tonight in the National Hockey League, your Canucks being victors as well. Thank you all for listening, participating, being part of the show. It's always a pleasure. For Bick Nazar, I'm Satyar Shah, Fast Eddie Gregory producing the show. This has been the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.